You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballou and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Good morning, Austin, Texas. Welcome inside another edition of Playing Through. I'm Bob Ballou.
And Carl Mickelson.
Carl, Bob, how are you?
I'm good. I did not make 9 consecutive birdies the last time I played, but I did make 2 birdies for the round. I know, that's disappointing. I didn't mean to let you down that much. But no, hinting at that because we've got a great guest coming up.
I was going to say, that's a great tease. That's an absolutely great tease. Do you know the guy that made 9 consecutive birdies? Well, we're about to bring him on the air and talk about that and so much more. Help us welcome in the great Omar Uresti. Omar, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great this morning.
Omar, you have had a very, very special moment for you a couple weeks ago. You won the 32nd Senior PGA Professional Championship out in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Congratulations, a 6-shot win. What were you feeling? Because it seems like when you win by that much against that many good players, you really got to get kind of zoned in and play pretty well to make something like that happen. Is that a fair assessment?
That's very fair. You know, it took it was kind of funny. I got off to a little bit of a slow start the first day. I was playing the Ryder course, which was the course we only played one time. And after that slow start, I made the turn and things finally started turning around, made a few birdies on the front 9 because I had started on the back. So, and then just from there, you know, Friday's round was just a good solid round. Didn't really make any mistakes, kept everything, in play. The swing was even felt a little funny at times, and I'd hit a shot and I'd like, oh no, kind of, and then it would be like 20 feet. And I was like, oh, okay. So I played a good solid round on Friday and shot 6 under, and it was just in a pretty good zone. And kind of Saturday, the same thing, got off, hit 3 wood on the first hole, about 15 feet, was a par 5, and made eagle there. I think I followed it up with a bogey on the 4th hole, and then I hit it on the fringe on the 5th hole and chipped it in for birdie. And then I parred 7, which was a par 5 that I probably should have birdied, but made a really good up and down actually for par. So I was very happy with that. I'm 2 under there. I get to the 9th hole. I have about 130 yards with the wind a little left to right into me. And I hit a 9-iron and it landed a foot behind the hole and bounced back in the hole for eagle. So I shot 4 under on the front. And then I made another couple of birdies on the back 9. It was just a good solid week. And so, I was very pleased with the way I played and how I, kept the ball pretty much in play all week.
Having played in so many of these events now and having so much success in these events, how hard is it? I mean, we know how many good players there are out there, and we know what it takes to win in some of these events. Well, Carl and I don't. You do. What does it take to continue to have the success you're having and play as well as you're playing as long as you've done it?
Practice. Lots and lots of practice. Mm-hmm. But also, I think, it takes heart as well. I've been told that I have a lot of heart and dedication, and, I'm a grinder. Even growing up, I had a gentleman that ran the Cherry Creek Optimus Club here in town, and he would take a handful of us down to San Diego for the World Junior tournament. And I was in college and we're a little bit older, met up with him one day, and he's like, of all the guys that I took to Junior World, he's like, I thought you might have had maybe the least amount of talent, but you had the most heart and dedication. So, and that's kind of what I always feel. I try to, keep grinding and keep working at it and just see what it'll, hopefully it produces. And last week it did.
Omar, you talk about the grind, and truly it is. It's a game of ebbs and flows, and sometimes we don't know why it's ebbing or flowing. But when you're on good runs like this, we know you're a good ball striker. We know you're going to be in the fairway most of the time. when do you know, like, when do you and your caddy know things are really clicking and we're kind of in a little bit of a zone where it's special? What are the telltale signs? I mean, because you're always going to kind of be down the pipe, but.
Yeah, you know, a couple weeks ago at the tournament, it was actually the first time, and I can't remember how long, that I actually put four good putting rounds together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I worked with the Stocktons some, and also I went to see Dr. Craig Farnsworth in Palm Springs this past March, yeah. And just ever since then, I've been putting a lot more consistent, and just, you know, so the putting's really come around, and it's really helped the scores.
That's amazing. You know, going back to the senior professional champion, PGA professional championship, people talk about it being all club professionals, but I mean, if I go down the list, I mean, my day job takes me up to Northern Michigan. So I see guys like Scott Hebert and Paul Stankowski. Speak to the depth and the quality of this field. I think people look at it as shop guys going out, and then you're one of the few that have played a lot on tour. Sort of dispel some myths about the depth and the strength of the fields that you play in when you go to events like this at the PGA of America.
There are so many good players and so many guys who have, you know, played the mini tours or played, you know, Korn Ferry or the PGA for at least a year or two, so they have experience. You know, they were unfortunate enough not to maybe make it out on those tours and advance anywhere, but you know, they've stayed in the golf business because they love golf, and you know, there's just so many good players out there, and you know, so many good club pros that you know, had the dream but just maybe didn't have the, you know, they had the game but maybe might not have had the mental edge or something else in life, you know, got in the way, and so they had to, you know, take a club pro job or something like that. But yeah, so many good players and so many good guys. And again, I think Jim Carter was there as well, who played a few years.
Oh yeah.
And we came to Texas the following week, and we had our senior state open and over in Mont Belvieu, Texas, east of Houston, and at Eagle Point Golf Club. And he ended up winning that by four shots. So he played really well. He shot 8 under the last day, you know, and I thought I might have a chance. I got off to a good start and shot 4 under on the front nine, but you know, he was firing an 8 under to stay 4 ahead.
Omar, you keep an interesting schedule. You know, as fans and as guys that cover the game a little bit, we see you pop up on a PGA Tour leaderboard. We see in PGA of America event section events. Walk the people through what a year in the life of Omar. How do you balance your calendar? How much of it is it spent trying to qualify for things, and how much is it spent locked into types of events you know you're going to play?
Yeah, you know, the tour events, the PGA Tour events, I still have a little bit of status out there with my past performance and my, you know, I have lifetime status because I've made 150 cuts out there. And I usually get in a couple of events a year, maybe 2 to 4. And if I make a cut, that ends up helping me with the next year. So, you know, those are just a kind of a play it by ear type events. And, you know, but usually I have a pretty good idea which ones they're going to be each year, because they're usually the opposite field events, like Barracuda or, you know, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic. So I know I kind of have an expectation of those and when I need to start getting ready for those tournaments. You know, we have our senior section events here that I was able to play in all year and didn't have any conflicts with that with any other tournaments. So, you know, that kind of kept me tournament sharp, you know, just the competition. And then every December for the past 4 or 5 years, I've been going down to Port St. Lucie, and they have a winter series of tournaments where we have 6 2-day tournaments in 3 weeks. And just,
wow.
Yeah. And, you know, we get to ride cars, so it's not that exhausting. But, you know, we have fun, and it's a good time, you know, get to hang out with buddies and, you know, just play a lot of golf. And, you know, that's what we dream and love to do. And, you know, so that keeps me, you know, kind of tournament sharp, and hopefully, you know, I can get out on the Champions Tour and, you know, do some damage in the next year or so before, you know, time maybe passes me by for that tour. But, you know, I feel like I can still, you know, compete, especially on the Champions Tour. And I can somewhat compete on the PGA Tour as well. I just, you know, it's a lot more difficult for me to win out there. It seems like the last few years, every time I do make a cut on the PGA Tour, I finish in like 70th or something. So, right. you know, that time's passing me by out there on that tour.
Hey, what's your most practical path to the PGA Tour champions, Omar? I mean, obviously, you've got some eligibility in some of these events, some you have to qualify for. But if everything, you know, went according to plan, what would be your, I want to say, easiest path to be a regular on the PGA Tour champions? But what do you see in terms of goal setting and the practical nature of what you need to do to get there? What is that? What is that path?
Well, having won a couple of weeks ago, that gets me in the KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship.
Good event.
So, you know, if we can get a really good finish there, a win would be lovely. But, mm-hmm. you know, if we can get a really good finish there and make some money and get up on the money list for the Champions Tour, then, you know, I'd have a little bit easier chance maybe getting in a couple more tournaments out there without having to Monday qualify. You know, hopefully like sponsor exemptions or something like that. And then, you know, unfortunately this year they're not having it, but Champions Q School is another pathway, even though that's kind of difficult. There's usually around, I think, what do we have, like 90 guys at final stage for five spots. And the 2 years that I've been, I finished eighth the first year and missed by like two strokes. And then I finished 12th this past year and missed by a couple of strokes as well. So it's, you know, it's, and it was kind of weird because the first year I didn't hit it great, but I putted pretty well. And then the second year, this past year, I hit it good, but putted poorly. So hopefully next year they'll both come together.
Omar, do you like Twitter?
Yeah. You know, I don't really get on it very often, except when that stuff starts happening.
Wow.
I've got to say, Omar, I mean, listen, your responses have been – I think it shows your true character. I think it shows who you are. I just want to dive into this just for a minute because sure, I think absolutely. it's such an interesting topic right now with so many people over something that to me doesn't seem maybe as big a deal as it seems to other people. Can you explain why people are mad and kind of where the rules stand in qualifying for these events or for playing in these events? I mean, you've had your PGA card for forever and paid your dues forever. So I know that this isn't as big a deal as I think a lot of people are making out to be, but what is your, what can you kind of explain it and then take us through your thoughts on all of this?
Yeah, you know, and when this first happened, when I won the regular PPC back in 2017 up in Oregon. I see both sides of it. The biggest thing even happened in our in the South Texas section as well, where, you know, they get upset because I'm a former tour player. Of course, they still call me a tour player, even though I'm not out there playing full time. And under the rules of, you know, the PGA of America, if we play more than 8 tournaments a year on any of the tours combined, then we're considered a tour player. But I haven't done that since 2012. And so, I think the biggest thing is that I'm a PGA Life member and I'm playing in these tournaments and I haven't really worked in the golf business, so to speak, as in a shop or teaching or anything like that. And I think that's the thing that gets a lot of them. They feel like I'm out there working on my game every single day, you know, 8 hours a week when, you know, I try to put in a few, couple hours at least, you know, 5 times a week, but, you know, and as far as good practice goes and, you know, trying to play some and just keep the game in shape. And, but, you know, with this game, you can overdo it, but getting back to the subject, you know, the PGA of America has the rules and I've been within the rules ever since I started. I paid my dues for, gosh, what is it? 27 years now.
93, right?
Yeah, since 93. So, you know, and I didn't take advantage of any of those dues until, you know, the last 5 years, 6 years. And, or seven, yeah, 6 years I started playing in our section events in 2014. And After about a year and a half of that, a few of the guys kind of raised the same issue with me, and there were a few guys who I was really surprised, especially one of them, especially who had played the tour before. That was, you know, he was working in the as a kind of director of golf, but he was one of the main guys, spearheaded it, and you know, they ended up voting life members not eligible to play in the open age division tournaments, but I can still play the senior age division. So and the one tournament that I could still play is the section championship, because it's the national qualifier, and under national rules I'm allowed. So you know, and I understand where they're coming from, and I see their side. Yes, I have a little bit of advantage because I did play, I had all that experience behind me, but at the same time, you know, I paid my dues for so many years and didn't take advantage of any of the benefits of it. And now I feel like I'm due. And, you know, part of the PGA of America is promoting the game, and I do promote the game in the way that I know how. You know, I play in tournaments, I play in pro-ams, I play in fundraisers. I have a first tee fundraiser every year. Unfortunately, we didn't have it this year or last year, but hopefully next year we'll get back to it. To raise money for the first tee of Austin, and you know, so I do quite a bit to promote the game, and always helping the members out here at Onion Creek where I play, and even when I go out to UT Club, a couple of guys might come ask me for some tips, and I'm more than happy to help.
Yeah, and Carl and I talked a lot about this on last week's show, and one of the things we hit on was, you know, what are you supposed to do? I mean, if there are rules in place for something and you're inside the rules, I'm not sure why it's an issue. We joked about, you know, I'm out at Twin Creeks, and Tim Petrovic and Chart Vanderwalt played in the Skins game out there. Are they not supposed to play in the Skins game just because they played on the Champions Tour or PGA Tour? I mean, you know, the one that I thought was the best, maybe the best tweet that you got in response, for those of you that didn't see it, one of the guys from No Laying Up used a pretty bad, not bad, I mean, it's just not a real fair word that he called you. And there were a lot of responses to it. And I thought one of the best ones was, boy, Phil Mickelson's going to go on the Champions Tour and start playing against all those guys. He shouldn't be allowed to do that. I mean, that's just not fair as far as he hits it. And it's like, I mean, where are the lines in some of this stuff, right? So, that's right. You know, why did you think it was important to go respond to a lot of those people? And how do you do, you know, Twitter has become such a divisive place for so many reasons, politics, obviously, but golf, you know, in a sense like this, how are you able to kind of keep your cool and have those conversations with people?
You know, that's just the way I've been. I'm not confrontational. Sure, there were things I wanted to say, but I know better.
All of us, Omar, all of us.
Yeah, and, you know, fortunately, I have some buddies that'll stand up for me. You know, I don't really, you know, that'll take up for me and speak their mind and on my behalf. And, you know, it's, it gets a little tough, but I just wanted to go out there and because there were so many positive tweets as well that I wanted to say thank you to all those folks. And then I at least gave a little bit, I think one tweet, I gave a little bit of an explanation, you know, of that, you know, that I was within the rules. I've been paying my dues and this and that. So, yeah, I just kind of wanted to say a little bit of my side and just thank you. Thank everybody for who was out there supporting me. And, you know, most of the folks, it seemed like that were negative on the issue are not even in the golf business.
Right.
And a lot of folks that I talked to, and my buddies, they relish the challenge of playing with somebody better because it brings their game up. And I know since I started playing in our section events that the scores have gotten better and better every year. And so the quality of golf has increased. Hopefully with the better golf, the sponsorships will increase. And that each person's game will get better because they'll have to work just a little bit harder. And so it's a win-win-win situation.
No question about it. You know, it's amazing to me that there's controversy at all. Golf is such a tough game. There's so many guys that are eligible. It's a dog-eat-dog confrontational. And you're clearly eligible for these events. You're within the rules. It's hard to call ethics. I mean, to you sacrificed a lot. You've dedicated your life to this. If you're within the rules, I don't think anybody should knock you for doing what you're capable of doing. But yeah, so obviously you're going to stay the course. I mean, you're going to play the same types of events. Obviously, the senior PGA. Does this controversy, does it make you think maybe I should be a little bit more involved or more of a classic PGA member? Or do you think you're there's really nothing more to that than being who you are?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. You know, I have thought about teaching and stuff, and actually just got approached, asked to speak with Jason Black, who, you know, big junior golf and owns, I guess, was part owner of Butler Pitch and Putt. They're just doing lots of renovations over there on Barton Springs. And he wants to talk about maybe becoming an associate pro out there, you know. So
I think there's something to that. I mean, you're a lifetime Longhorn. You've never left Austin. You've stayed true to Onion Creek. I mean, you've built ties. You know, maybe there's something to that. Maybe just a little bit more FaceTime. Maybe let, you know, not only give back to the game, but let the game give back to you. I mean, you've been true to your university, your city, all this time. I think maybe seeing you around town a little bit more might not be that bad a thing. Might be great for the game.
Yeah. So I'm hopefully going to speak with him in the next couple of days, and we'll see what transpires with that and what it entails. And you know, but until then, I want to get out on the Champions Tour. That's the goal. And the one way that I've been able to stay competitive is to be able to play in the PGA of America events. And, you know, the hope was not to be out doing that as long. So, but unfortunately the game just hadn't been there at the right time to be able to qualify for the Champions Tour. So hopefully, like I said, maybe next year when they do have Q school again, I can get out there, and then they don't have to worry about me for a little while.
It's certainly an unfortunate situation, but one that I feel like Omar has handled with dignity and class and humility through it all. All right, when we come back, more with Omar Yuresky, we talk about what Carl hinted at the beginning of the show, 9 consecutive birdies. How many have you made in a row? Think about that as we take a break. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Good morning again, Austin, Texas. Welcome back inside Playing Through as we continue our conversation with Omar Yuresky. And Carl, I know one of the things that Omar is really big on is what's in the future for him. He's been around so many great players, and it's pretty amazing to think who he came into this game with.
Bob touched on Phil Mickelson and you know, a number of guys out there from your generation that are – what's that like to see? I mean, it's amazing how the game can be full circle. I mean, you probably have those things that go back to junior golf. But what's it like to see the state of the Champions Tour now where you've got guys like Bernard Langer in their 60s who are still competitive, all the way down to guys that you still kind of in your mind think should be playing week in, week out on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of – a lot of us turned 50 around the same time with Dudley Hart and Chris DeMarco and Robert Gomez, myself. We were all in the same year. You know, now you got Mickelson and Stricker and, you know,
Ernie Els.
Jerry Kelly, Ernie Els. You know, I first met Ernie back in 1992 in South Africa playing down there. And we have the Sunshine Tour. There were 8 tournaments. He played in 4 of them. There were the 4 majors. And I was had the honor and pleasure of playing with him the final day of the South African Masters. And even during the other 3 majors, I had called my brothers up and said, "Hey, there's a world beater down here. He's gonna be really good." And then 2 years later, he's winning the U.S. Open. But you know, there's so many good golfers out there from when I was just coming out. You know, that it's good to see finally that there's a lot, you know, more. Not that there wasn't competition before, but it seems like you have a wider array of people who can win now. And I think that's really good for the game. You know, instead of just watching one person, it gets, you know, sometimes it's exciting, but sometimes it gets, you know, you want to see other names up there. And It's been good to see, and I've really enjoyed, you know, my brother caddies for Jeff Maggart. He's caddied for Maggart for 7 years, so, you know, always rooting for him, even though he's an Aggie. But, you know, I got to cheer for my brother as well.
That's right.
You know, but it's been good to see the younger names come up. When I was first getting started on the Nike Tour in 93, we used to have Jim Furyk and, you know, three or four other of guys. We would all travel together and stay in hotel rooms. You know, we'd have four or five people in a hotel room, you know, so a low score would get the bed. Other guys would floor. Yeah. So, you know, it was a fun time. It was a great time, and it's good to see some of those names doing really well.
You touched on something about your younger days. You've got 8 wins worldwide. You talked about playing on the Sunshine Tour all as a young man, all the way over in South Africa. Is that advice you would give to a younger player if they had the opportunity to go play globally, go play in other countries, travel, or is it maybe just particular to your situation? I mean, talk about that experience a little bit, and would you advise it for certain players?
I would advise it, especially if you're, you know, if you can stand to be away from home for that long. You know, there's so many mini tours here in the States now that, you know, but they're so expensive to play in, and you don't win that much money, where you can go to some of these foreign tours, and if you're fortunate enough to qualify for, you can actually play halfway decent and make more money. But it's also great experience. You get experience with the travel. You can decide whether you like to travel or not. You know, I knew a few players who were really good players. One of them's Matt Dobbins, who's won the PPC tournament before. He was an exceptional player and still is, but he just didn't like to travel and didn't want to be away from his family. So, but I do recommend it for experience, and, you know, just lets you know what's out there and what you need to work on and what you need to get used to.
Do you remember the most out of your element you ever felt during all that travel, playing the global tours, like in any crazy travel adventure stories you might remember?
Yeah, I was, gosh, well, I was, what, 24 years old in South Africa. And that was really the only, you know, out of country traveling that I did for a tour for any extended period of time. You know, I've played in a couple other countries, but played in South America in a few events with the Corn Ferry Tour. You know, so those weren't as bad. But South Africa, unfortunately, there was a gentleman named Mike Leemhuis, who is pretty, I guess, he's gotten become a pretty big name in the PGA of America and stuff, but used to work at Congressional. And he was doing a little travel company at the time, and he had organized it to where 23 of us, of Americans, he had a group of 23 Americans. We all traveled together and, you know, kind of stayed in the same hotel and went from place to place together and stuff. So that wasn't as much of a shocker as it could have been if I'd have just been on my own. And we had a blast. So we had a bunch of friends, you know, made a bunch of friends down there with those guys, and, you know, keep in touch with some of them today. And it's just been a blast. You know, it was a blast down there, and it was just, you know, that was probably the hardest thing to do. Actually, the hardest thing to do was to learn how to drive on the wrong side of the car on the wrong side of the street. But, yeah, so that was probably the most out of my element I've been, but we had a blast. And fortunately, it wasn't, you know, too drastic a change. It was, you know, kind of behind in time, like going back in time a little bit, but it was still, you know, pretty normal.
That's awesome. Before we let you go, I do want to get a golf tip from you.
2 weeks off and then quit.
You may. That's fair.
It's better than that.
In 1994 at the Shreveport Open, you made 9 consecutive birdies. Mark Calcavecchia and Kevin Streelman, I believe, are the only two to do it since that happened in a PGA sanctioned event. How do you make back-to-back birdies? Forget 9. I need to know how to make back-to-back birdies.
It's called luck.
Call the Stocktons. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I just, I have, I guess about 4 or 5 months ago, I did a, little remembrance article. Did a little, someone had interviewed me on those 9 birdies in a row, and I just reread the article about, right before I got online with you guys. So, that 9 in a row was something else. Talking about being in a zone. Oh man. It was just unbelievable. Yeah. It was one of those days that I was playing with the Perry Moss, who was, from Louisiana and had a decent following, and I got on the roll, and the next thing I knew, it seemed like there were 400 or 500 people following us, but I was in such a zone, I hardly noticed them, and just kind of went about my business, and I got to 5 in a row, which had tied my personal best, and I just kind of shook my head and was like, no, focus, one shot at a time, and that's kind of what you got to do, is just kind of just get that, what I call it, tunnel vision, where you're just seeing, a circle or whatever that the ball's going to travel in, and just kind of focus on the hole once you get on the green and see if it'll go in.
What happened on the 10th hole?
It was a long par 3. It was like 220 yard par 3. I hit it on the fringe, chipped it to a foot. and then I birdied the next hole.
How about that?
Yeah, so I birdied 14, and then I bogeyed 15, and then parred in. So
10 of 11. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, and like you said, it's been tied. Mark Calcavecchia did it up in Canada. I think his day was a lift, clean, and place day, I believe. And there was actually a young man, I think, on the Asian tour a few years ago that also did it. But yes, I was the first one to do it in a professional tournament, first professional to do it in a professional tournament. So it's a great honor to be in that category. And I beat, surpassed Chichi Rodriguez's 8 in a row record that he had set on the Champions Tour. And I had the pleasure of meeting him when I was 12 at the Andy Bean World Pro Junior. It was the only year they ever had this tournament. And I played a couple of practice rounds with he and his nephews. And then he would come to Austin for the Legends of Golf back in the day. And he would come over to the house, and I'd go down and help on the range for the Legends of Golf, and he would get me out there hitting balls on the range in front of people. So I had early experiences with crowds at a young age, and I think that helped a lot. But being able to watch all those legends play and practice and see, how hard they worked, even though they were having more fun than working, it really inspired me to work harder and to want to get out on tour and play this game that I love.
Omar, you could be a member anywhere. Obviously, every club wants a PGA Tour player they can brag about having. Explain your loyalty to Onion Creek and why it's been so special to you, and why that's an enduring thing in your life.
Well,
great place. I'm not saying it's not, but it's just interesting. No, yeah.
I'm 52. I've lived out here for 42 years. Mm-hmm. When I was married, I had a 4-year hiatus where we had moved to Meridian over by Grey Rock Golf Club. And as soon as I got divorced, I was back here. And it's just, it's where I grew up learning to play. It's, where I learned, or where I got to see the greats play, and just had so much fun. We had some great pros when I was growing up that we had a lot of fun with Brent Buckman and another gentleman named Jack Gaudian. Wow. Brent's kind of in charge of the Discovery property that's being built over in Driftwood. And we ran into him the other day. We had the Hannon Cup. And so he and I were reminiscing about the good old days here at Onion Creek when he was the pro. With New Year's Day, we'd have members' kids against the shop guys and touch football on the driving range because the course was closed. On cold, wet, rainy days when the course would kind of be closed or nobody was coming out to play, he would close shop, and we'd go take one club or two clubs and play cross country golf from the first tee down 10 fairway across 11, 12 to 15 green, and then backwards from 16 to 9. And, we'd have putting games and chipping games in the pro shop. We just had so much fun growing up as kids and here, and it's just so many good memories, and just love, the people. There's still a few members that have been out here longer than I have, so that's great to see. Yeah, and they're in their 90s now and still playing golf, and just and there's probably at least 5 or 6 of us that grew up out here that are still living out here. And so So I still have those friends, and it's just been a blast. And the members out here have been great to me. And, you know, the owners have always been great, and we have new owners now. And Arcus Golf is part of it, as y'all would know, with Twin Creeks. And it's just near and dear to my heart, and just, I love it. And I'm looking out my back patio window right now at the first fairway, and you know, go do some practice here in about an hour.
That's awesome. That really is awesome. I wasn't going to bring it up because of the way it ended, but you brought up the Hannon Cup. So I thought we'd, you know, just kind of figure out, you know, what happened. I mean, you guys are the pros. You're supposed to take down those amateurs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got my 2.5 points.
Don't blame me.
Well said.
It comes back down to sometimes these, you know, the club pros are having to work way too many hours to be able to work on their game enough to keep them in shape. There's some of the guys are, you know, obviously working anywhere from 40 to 60 hours a week, and, you know, have families and stuff. So it makes it a little tough, but the weather, that was not very fun weather Monday and Tuesday.
My goodness.
The morning on Monday was great. It was like 75 degrees, and about not even 5 minutes before I teed off in the afternoon, the cold front hit and dropped about 20 degrees, and, you know, was quickly wrestling to put on some long, like Under Armour type sleeves underneath my golf shirt. So it was quite the experience on Monday afternoon and Tuesday when it was like 40 degrees and kind of misty off and on all day. But it was a lot of fun, and it's for a good cause. And
that's the biggest thing, right? It's the cause. I mean, the cause, and doing it all for Coach Hannon and everything that he did for the game of golf. And,
it raises scholarship money for kids. And so it's, you know, and like I said, it's camaraderie out there as well. We have fun playing with the guys and everything, and just trying to, you know, win for pride's sake. And, it's always fun. It's always fun.
How cool was it to get Mark Brooks down this year? I know that's trying to get more real guys, more real professional guys that have had long standing, success on the tour. How cool was that?
It's cool, you know, and in the years past, we've had, Wes Short and Rich Beam played. I think even Joe Ogilvie played 1 year. So, it's kind of cool. We get out a couple of the old tour players and out there and see what we can do, if we can help. And unfortunately, we didn't really, you know, help that much. I guess we didn't inspire enough. I don't know.
Well, who was your singles match opponent, Omar? Sorry.
I'm sorry?
Who was your singles match opponent?
Oh, gosh. Like, I just went blank on that.
That's focus. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I'm so bad with names, too. I'm so bad with names. Now, tell you what, though. He won the last two holes to tie the match.
Uh-oh.
But was it Dillard? I don't even remember who I played.
So that was the half point. I got you.
Yeah, that was the half point. I had I chipped in for eagle to go two up, and then I was just like, all right, I can't lose now.
Isn't that always the feeling in match play? The feeling's always like when you get to that point, you're like, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, and then I three-putted 17, and I hit a beautiful shot on 18, and it just went about 3 or 4 yards too far into the rough and had a touchy lie and pitched it to about 7 feet and missed the putt. And he made a great 15-footer for par. So he won the last two holes to tie the match and just had a blast. He was a good match. He wouldn't go away. But it was a lot of fun.
Well, Omar, I've played in your event with the first tee. As you know, we had Omar on live on CBS Austin during it. And you do a lot of great stuff for this community, for the game of golf in Austin. And we're very appreciative of you taking some time to spend a few minutes with us this morning. And Carl and I are just very appreciative and wish you the best of luck. Hopefully you get on the Champions Tour very soon and we can get you back on to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be more than happy to.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
That is absolutely. That's Omar Uresti. Carl, one thing I've never done that I did. When we come back, you're listening to Playing Through on the Horn.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
All right, welcome back to our final segment of Playing Through on the Horn. He is Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Ballew. Carl, that was a great interview with Omar. He tells some great stories, but I just go back to the way he's handled this whole situation with the PGA professionals and everything that's going on there. I'm just so impressed with what he says on Twitter to other people, how he's handled this situation. I just personally don't – I understand, like he said, he sees both sides of it. I don't personally see a problem with doing something that is within the rules, because if you don't do that, then you're subjecting yourself and everyone else to – you just got to make your own call at all times based on, well, I'm just going to make up my own rules, or I'm going to do whatever I feel is best, which is fine. I just don't have a problem with it.
Competitive golfers are independent contractors, man. They get to eat the fish they catch. I mean, it's really it's not an enviable position. I mean, it's great to be in the top 30 on the PGA Tour, but it as you go down the list and down the list, and Omar is in an interesting place with his status. It's all hard. I mean, it's all difficult. It's all do or die. It all has to do with how did I play in this round and the next round, and did I make that cut, and what do I do with that? I mean, I don't envy any of it. So to take pot shots at it from the peanut gallery, it just doesn't add up. I think these guys need to find a new battle. And I know Twitter is fertile ground for this kind of, kind of nipping at people's ankles. But I'm kind of with Omar. Just kind of let it roll off your shoulders and go do what you have to do to make do.
Yeah, I totally agree. We really appreciate that, because that was about 40 minutes of really good conversation with Omar Uresti. Always appreciate him taking the time to spend some time with us. And Carl, I want to hear about the beginning of what you said at the beginning of the show. We joked about the 9 consecutive birdies. You said you made 2. Tell me all about it.
You know, and it's no, that's pathetic. I mean, there's listeners that probably make, 10 a week, but for whatever reason, through the summer and the fall, birdies have been scarce. I wherever I play, whether I'm driving it well or not, I just have not been producing a lot of birdies. I mean, my scores are pretty good. I'm down to 9.9 from low 11.
We're under 10. There we go.
That's okay. So, but it, for whatever reason, there have been a lot of birdies. I switched back to the style of putter and the age of putter that I had in high school. I'm a Ping B60 fanatic, and I've tried the Scotty Cameron version. I've tried the Odyssey version. I've tried every other new version with the insert. And nothing feels like an extension of my arm more than the old B60. I've got, I think it's a nickel, some kind of metal mix nickel one that I just had off of eBay that I wanted to have if I ever needed to go back to B60. And I thought I'd try it. When I went out to Blue Jack, it didn't go well. It was the first time out, first full round out with it. And my ball striking was above average on Blue Jack. And my putting, I three putted the first three holes after hitting all the greens. So I'm bogey, bogey, bogey with perfect ball striking. So went back to Plum, simpler, gentler, more, greens I'm more comfortable with, and was more comfortable. Yeah, I had under 30 putts. I want to say I had 27 putts or something like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, made some money to make. So
hey, I mean, how many times do we have to say it? It's whatever you're comfortable with. It has nothing to do with, do you have the latest equipment or the best fashion or the whatever it is? If you're comfortable and you play well in it or with it, I see no issue with it.
It seems to work. It's not this. It's lighter because it's not all these new. It's not the new materials and it. You know, all these solid pieces of stainless steel that all the best putter companies brag about. And we talked about David Adell being just brilliant. I mean, I know there's inserts and interchangeable pieces to the higher end putters now, but this is just as primitive as it gets. I mean, almost back to the 60s style of when Carson Solheim was making those putters. It's just a really simple design, but it feels good right now. It might all go to crap at some point, but right now it feels like it did in high school, and that I felt like I was a really good putter in those years. A little bit more handsy, which is not good. I try to be pure and pendulum. There is a little bit more of a push to the stroke, so it's a work in progress, but I'm intrigued by it. It's working for the moment.
Well, you can be as handsy as you want if you make a lot of birdies. I guess
that's it.
That's what makes the most sense. Carl, one thing that I've done that on the golf course I've never done before, I got a chance on Thursday to play in the Comfort Crew for Military Kids Boots and Birdies tournament out at Falcon Head. A great tournament they throw every year for ensuring that military children can thrive. As you know, there are 2 million kids in this country with a parent serving in the military, and so they work really hard in fundraising efforts to do as much as they can for those military kids. And it's a special tournament every year. I've been involved with it for a few years, either playing or working, you know, emceeing, stuff like that. So always very honored when they ask me to do something like that, or even just getting to play in the tournament, because it's for such a good cause. And the group I played with, Carl, it's kind of a good story. It's a fun group. Three guys out from Spanish Oaks, and one of them that invited me to come out and play. And so on the on our third hole, which was the 10th hole first hole at Falcon Head, I hit driver past the pin on a par four. It was down a little bit to the right off the green, but it was about a 390-yard drive. Whoa. And you remember the weather on Thursday. It was very windy. So let's be honest with what happened here. It was a downhill hole with a 30-mile-an-hour wind at my back, and it probably got the cart path if I had to guess. But none of those things come into play when you can just tell someone, hey, I hit a 390-yard drive, right?
That's right.
So a couple holes later, I rolled in a 50-footer for eagle from off the green after hitting driver off the deck into the wind to the fringe or to the just off the green. And I rolled in a 50-footer for eagle. The next hole, I rolled in a side swinger 35-footer for birdie.
Whoa.
And so the guys I'm playing with are like, who are you? And I totally agree, because there were some really bad shots I hit that they probably went, I don't know who you are. So we get to the final hole of the day, and I don't know if you know Falcon Head well enough, but there's a hole.
I do.
Yeah, so it's the 7th hole, or the 16th. No, I got to remember, because, you know, you play those tournaments. And it's backside.
And the nines are reversed from when it originally opened.
Yeah. So I think it was 10. It must have been 10. No, we started on 8. 9. Yeah, so it was 10 that I hit the 390-yard drive. It's that par 4. It goes down a little bit to the left.
A little downhill, yeah. Yeah.
So 7 is a drivable par 4. Now, I don't know the distance on the hole, but a lot of times when I've played that hole, I've had to hit 3-wood because the wind
is a huge waste bunker. Most of the landing area is huge waste bunker, yeah.
You're basically hitting it back toward Lake Travis High School.
Correct.
So we get to the tee. We had 2 mulligans each. I had 1 left, and we had saved one of them so I could hit 2 drives on that hole, just whether I hit a good drive or bad drive, we just want to finish strong. So I hit my first one. It wasn't great, but we had a ball in play, and so I was like, I'll just hit another one. It'll be for my mulligan. And I hit it, Carl, into the wind with driver. I hit it right down the middle, tracking to the pin the whole way. We see it bounce over the waste bunker, and we're like, all right, well, it's going to be up there. At least we'll have a shot at eagle wherever it is. I hit it to a foot. I almost made it. We actually had a caddy with us, and he said it went just barely went across the front of the hole and stopped. I mean, Carl, I'm talking like
a
literal
gosh.
Foot. Obviously, whoa. I've never made a hole-in-one, but I've never –
it could have been an albatross.
Close.
Yeah.
I've never par come four. That close to making a hole-in-one on a par 4. So – we had a lot of fun, finished tied for 2nd, really good group of guys. And, you know, tournaments like that, Carl, it's just a lot of fun to get to play in them and get to support some of our local charities.
Tremendous cause. Yeah. I mean, that you can't help but rally for the Comfort Crew cause. That's amazing. And that's great for you, because when I play in those things, we're always about 13th or about 4th from last, and it never pans out that way. And you really, really helps your team. I think, what's going to happen is not only are you going to be invited back next year, they might send a limo for you.
Well, I was trying to convince them already to get involved in the ALS tournament. So, you know, I've got good work going on all fronts. Big thank you to Omar Uresti for joining us this morning. Had a great conversation with him. And Carl, we will we'll do this again next week. Really looking forward to it.
We're sneaking up on the Masters. It's going to get good. Can't wait.
We're going to talk a whole lot about the Masters next week on this show. We're very excited for you guys to join us, and we'll talk about that. He is Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Ballew. This is Playing Through on the Horn. Hey, go out and make a bunch of birdies, everyone.